Hello, everyone.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio, Toastmaster 7 podcast. Tonight, I am joined with Bob Busick and Chris Hamill. Bob is going to be my co-host for the evening, and we are going to tackle the topic many of us, I believe, struggle with, adding humor into our speeches, in particular into serious topics. So I'd like to introduce my co-host, Bob.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Kim. How are you?
I'm great tonight. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. And, yeah, it's an exciting night. We're going to learn how to add humor to your speeches and talk a little bit about that. And I'd like to jump right into it. Why don't we introduce Chris on the line here?
Yay!
So, ladies and gentlemen,
what's that?
So what we'd like to do is introduce Chris Hamill. Chris Hamill's member of San Diego 7. Chris has been a member since 2010. And although he only has a CC so far, Chris has given many a speeches. He's been a huge asset to the district. He's been kind of spearheading our mentorship program, which is a huge part of club success. And he's most recently been the VPE of membership for San Diego 7. So, Chris Hamill, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. It's nice to
welcome.
Be here.
Chris,
so,
you know,
Why don't we jump right in, Kim? Go ahead.
Yeah, I believe to kick us off, I'm just going to share a little story of my own, which is that I've overcome a lot of my fears of speaking, but the biggest one I have that haunts me over and over again is adding humor into my speech. And you are wonderful at adding humor in so naturally, and an Area 21 winner and second place in the Eastern Division speech contest winner. So I would love to hear what some of your tips might be just for a beginner, somebody who might be a little bit fearful of adding some humor in for a first time.
Sure. Well, the first thing I do is I say, write your speech. Try to make it as something that sort of lends itself to comedy, but don't try to add a lot of jokes at first. I try to tell them that you'll revise that speech sort of a couple times through, and you'll add little lines, you'll add little things to it. But try not to be funny all at once, because you'll be disappointed with the result, and you won't be happy with it.
That's true. And what happens if you bomb? I think that's a big fear of everybody's as well.
That's okay. I think that everybody does it while they're trying to find their voice. Everyone has a mm-hmm. different rhythm, a different way of delivering things. And I think the first time I did stand-up comedy, I ran through the routine so fast I didn't give anybody any time to laugh. So people began to realize, well, I'm just really sort of reciting some lines up there. And since I'm not going to give them a second to laugh, they're just not going to. And that was not a good moment. So I think that there's a certain amount of you trying to figure out what it is that you're trying to get through to people and maybe why you aren't able to. Maybe it's the structure of it. Maybe you feel awkward up there and your nervousness is making people feel nervous for you.
Yes, we've all been in those seats where the person is not doing so well and the tension in the room goes up and up and up. And that's not a fun place to be. And that's why I know for people I speak to in Toastmasters who are nervous
yeah.
about adding humor, that's my big fear.
Right.
For
well,
sure.
I think that hard as adding humor is, it's easy to take it away. And sometimes when I'm bombing on a speech, I take the humor away and just get back to what I was saying without any of the humor added. And so that's been sort of a lifesaver. But if your whole point is you're doing a humorous speech contest or something else, you sort of have to write it out. But if
yeah,
you're talking
you know,
about
Kim,
the...
I was going to add to what Chris was saying. Adding you know, if you're not naturally funny, adding humor after the speech has been written is a great way to, you know, to add humor to it. I know Judy Carter is somebody I've been following. She's an author. She's written something called The Comedy Bible, and she gives you techniques on how to add humor in after you've written speech. So what she kind of says is, you know, don't change your topic to a more funny topic. Go with what you know and then come back and add humor. And she gives you some formulas in her books on how to do that. That's Judy Carter with The Comedy Bible. And that's really a good way to do it. I know for myself, and maybe Chris can speak to, you know, what he does. For myself, I've written a couple funny speeches that really it didn't start that way. The subject matter itself was funny and kind of created a character out of it. But that's just kind of a different way that I do it. And really it's kind of hit and miss, like Chris said. Sometimes, you know, it's not funny and it bombs, and you know, you just have to test it, you know, as they say. You might have heard this before, but you know, comedy isn't pretty. and so you really have to just kind of test it and test it with your audiences. And the other thing is that you'll find is that sometimes, you know, it'll work really well with one audience, and then you'll go and try it on somebody else and or another audience, and it just totally bombs, or maybe it's even offensive or something. So, you know, you got to be real careful with comedy sometimes.
That's a great point about offending someone and trying it with different audiences. In many people's speeches, they're talking about serious topics or maybe heavy topics, and they want to add something humorous in. How do you avoid being offensive in a more serious type of topic? Is it a practice situation? Or, Chris, what do you think about that?
I think sometimes you need to give a little background before you start the jokes. Like, sometimes you can't just say, Jeff will do anything for a candy bar. You want to say, Jeff loves candy bars. Man, you know, every time we go to the store, he's got to get 3 or 4 of those. You know, as a matter of fact, Jeff will do anything if you offer him a candy bar, because the first statement softens the second statement. If he's a big guy and you go, Jeff loves candy bars, you know, people go, hey, is that a fat joke? I don't understand that joke. So if you're going to make a joke, you have to sort of preference it up front. I mean, in comedy, you wouldn't bury the punchline. You wouldn't sort of pre-give away the punchline, but in a serious speech, you want everyone to be on the same page that you are, so that when you get to the punchline, people are already like, oh, I know that he likes candy bars. I know that you have personal experience with him buying candy bars. And that's funny in that context.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so give some background. And I know you also talked a little bit about storytelling and maybe changing up the narration of that. And characters,
yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I mean, you don't have to have personal experience with the person. You can sort of narrate what's happening to them or things that are happening around them, and that helps to sort of not divorce yourself, but separate yourself from it, especially if it's something like a eulogy. Sometimes you want to give stories, but you don't necessarily want to maybe expose that it was you, or, and I can't think of a reason why you wouldn't, but there are some people who are real uncomfortable talking about themselves in that context, so they sort of become a character in their own story. And then later you can reveal it and say, well, I know because that person was me, and I was 19 when that happened, or something like that. Sometimes it's helpful to tell it, especially if it's really personal and you're really struggling to get through it without crying.
Right. Which can be challenging
sometimes.
Maybe just
make them characters.
On the same vein, Chris, Chris and I have done some improv classes together through National Comedy Theater, and we found that there are techniques also that you can use in storytelling that make your stories come alive and make your jokes come alive as well around things like pantomime and gibberish and, you know, stage movement, body movement, that kind of pull people deeper into your story than just trying to use colorful language to pull them in. And so, you know, when you're going for a comedy laugh, you know, that's no different. You know, you get a bigger laugh when you get that facial expression and that body movement involved. You know, I could give a couple examples. It'd be inappropriate, but, you know, you kind of get an idea of what's going on there. You know, when you see people going through, I mean, I did this one speech. It was about a colon cleanse that went wrong for me at the time. And I used a lot of body movement, which really made it, you know, that's another one where, you know, you got to find the right audience for that. But, you know, without the body movement, I would have lost, you know, half my speech. So.
Okay. Using body movement.
Right.
That's
I do use a lot of body movement also.
Right.
And on that same vein, mm-hmm. you two are very natural comedians. And I would say that I am not. So going back to the naturally funny, adding, you know, don't change your topic and the Judy Carter piece, how do you do it so it doesn't sound forced? I feel that if I'm adding something in or in my storytelling, I can't, sorry, I don't know what that was. Sometimes when I'm storytelling, I feel like if I add something funny, it feels forced and it's not natural for me. And it's going to, I think the audience is going to pick up on that I'm putting something in that's funny. How do you do it so it's so natural? You both, I think, are
it's okay that if the audience spots it, it's okay. Sometimes you say something like, you know, boy, I just flew in from Chicago and boy, are my arms tired. You could really sell the awkward, and people know that it's a bit, people know that it's there to be funny, but you can sort of exaggerate it. On the other hand, if you are talking about something serious and it's something personal, the more personal you can make it and the more personal the comedy that comes from it, so people will feel a sincerity, like, well, you lived through it. It's gallows humor when you're, you know, when something serious has happened and you're joking about it, but it's not really that funny, but people can relate to that.
Yeah, and sometimes it's kind of a play on words, too. I know I do a lot of, I notice a lot in language and things like that. So, like we were talking earlier, and, you know, we were talking about, you know, what would you name your show, and we were talking about, you know, making it rains or some kind of play on words around your name and stuff. And yep. I was thinking, you know, I know Chris is a big fan of Five Guys, as I am, and mm-hmm. you know, I could have said something like, you know, Chris was the sixth guy in Five Guys or something that would have added kind of a little bit of humor to it. So you just kind of, you know, find funny things, exaggerations around the topic that you're dealing with or the people that you're dealing with. Sometimes the exaggerations can, you know, go a little too far, so you got to be careful that they're not racist or offensive or things like that. But, you know, for the most part, it works. You know, it works to find that exaggeration, and it works to find the contrarian or two, where it's the opposite of what you were thinking I was going to say.
Can you give an example of that?
Yeah, like in, if you've seen the movie Young Frankenstein, Marty Feldman is standing outside, and Dr. Frankenstein or Frankenstein's wife just pulls up, and he had been in the laboratory with Inga, the assistant, and so the four of them are out there, and Dr. Frankenstein says to Igor. He says, "Hey, can you help me with the bags?" And he goes, "Sure, I'll take the blow and you take the brunette." And so that's kind of funny because you just kind of did the opposite of what he was talking about. But it means the same thing, right? So you kind of twist the words around to mean something different. And you're always looking for, you know, the other side of the coin on the phrase that was just said. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that totally makes sense. That's good. it's going to take practice, I think. A lot of this is about practicing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And getting the courage
to
stand up in front of this and try it out with a group. Thank goodness for Toastmasters.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely. It's free to practice, and it's less humiliating.
Mm-hmm. Did you, either of you, actually, Chris, will you answer this? Did you start out testing? I know I've seen you go into Toastmasters, and now you're doing comedy, and you're winning awards, and you're doing all sorts of things. Did you start out practicing in front of friends, or did you ever have fear of it, or did you jump up on stage at Toastmasters and start?
No, I was always good at the comedy stuff because that's my defense mechanism. That's my go-to. So I never thought I wasn't funny, which is arrogant, but getting on stage was something completely different. I didn't want to do that at all. And the first couple times I did it, I was horrified. I think the first four times that I went up for Table Topics, I couldn't stay up there for a minute. I think went to five or six times. I think I couldn't rise it all the way to 1 minute, and I would just bolt back from my chair. I think Bob asked me one time what role lemons play in my life, and I said, well, I like lemonheads, and people laughed. Well, while people are laughing, I'll come up with what I want to say, and I was like, that's all I got, and then I ran back to my chair. So staying up there hasn't been easy, but staying up there has allowed me to be funny and improvise and do that stuff. And it hasn't always been successful. It hasn't always been, you know, well received, but 9 times out of 10, I get a laugh.
Okay. And you just keep going, even if you don't get that laugh. I love it.
I sort of act like it's the audience's fault that they didn't get it.
Okay.
It's totally the audience's fault.
I go, that joke was funnier than you guys acted. You know?
Yeah. That joke is beyond you guys. But that doesn't work for getting callbacks, but it is it is kind of true. Way.
Well, it's funny. I mean, even late night comedians hit like a bad note and they go, that one was rough. They acknowledge it because it's charming when you acknowledge that you just failed. They'll laugh and then they move on.
That's actually a good tip. I've seen both of you do that, and it works perfectly because it eases the tension in the room.
Mm-hmm. If people know you aren't humiliated by it, then they're not humiliated by it either.
Okay.
And people empathize with you on stage.
Right. And they want to. I think people want to be there for you. So it gives them that opportunity.
Yes, and they go, he's not bothered by it, so I'm not bothered by it.
And it's true. It eases the tension.
Yeah.
So, Bob, I'm going to ask you the same question. Did you just get on stage and start with humor because it was comfortable, or did you practice with a smaller group first? How did you start?
Like Chris said, you know, humor was a defense mechanism for me, you know, growing up in high school, you know, being, kind of a smaller kid when I was growing up and, you know, I wasn't a preemie or anything, but, you know, I was a smaller kid. And, you know, it was kind of a defense mechanism, a way for people to like me. I found I was good at it, and I could never identify. I never really identified what it was that was funny or wasn't. It's just I just knew how to say funny stuff. When I got up in Toastmasters, it didn't come right away. It was more of I had to get comfortable first because, you know, when you're starting Toastmasters, you got that fear there, and the fear is blocking you from so much, your humor, your wisdom, your organization, your being who you want to be in the moment, say what you want to say. That's why Toastmasters, I think, exists to get over that fear. Once you get through that fear and you're more comfortable, then you can start to channel some of those expertise that you have, that sweet spot that you have as far as, you know, your clarity and your ability to communicate a message. So if you're a funny person, and that can naturally come through more once you get comfortable, and that's what happened with me. I got more comfortable as I did it more. And if I were to recommend anything to anyone, I would say that don't stop practicing Toastmasters. and I would say ever, because it, and it doesn't need to be Toastmasters, it can be anything, but be engaged in a group where you can practice often, because it is your number one skill. It is the biggest skill that you're going to have to make an impression. It's going to cross all boundaries and help you in all areas of your life and any career that you decide to change to. You know, it'll always be there waiting for you as a competitive advantage over this, you know, highly competitive market that we're in nowadays.
I agree 100% on that one. Just, I'm going to step back for both of you on this. Mm-hmm. And ask probably the first question I should have asked, which is, do you think and why adding humor into your speech is important? I think it is important. That's why I'm asking these questions. But why do you think it is important to add that into your speeches, even if it is a serious subject? Chris, go ahead first.
I think it's important, especially if it's a serious subject. I mean, don't do anything that's distasteful. Don't inject humor where it doesn't belong. You know, obviously some topics are really serious, that it'd be extremely distasteful. If you're talking about abortion, don't try to, you know, insert a bunch of stuff in there. But for most serious subjects, if you're trying to convince them to go green or something like that, injecting humor will keep them away. It'll be a point of difference in your speech that people haven't heard. They haven't heard the quips. They haven't heard this, and you can make a subject a lot more charming. You can help get your point across. And with one that's not so serious, I think humor is important because it helps people relate to you better. I think if you make people laugh, people will remember your speech. People will remember you. They just like
right.
you a lot more. You seem more charismatic when you make people laugh. And I don't have a lot of charisma naturally, but people go, oh, that was a fantastic speech. And, you know, sometimes I'll go out to the district and people go, oh, you did that action figure speech. I remember that speech.
I do remember that speech.
That's memorable. Yes. And they remember that speech because I made them laugh a lot, and that's fantastic. It just helps things stick a little bit more.
Excellent. What do you think, Bob?
About what?
Why do you think humor is important?
Well, yeah, I think humor is important in so many areas, and speaking is probably the biggest one. I know, you know, you've probably heard the saying that you know, funny is money, and that is no bigger truth than in public speaking, you know. And so why is it important in public speaking? Because in my personal opinion, it connects you to the audience in a deeper way. They like you more when they're laughing with you. And keep in mind that, you know, with your friends, you can poke fun at your friends and they'll laugh and you'll have a good time. But when you try that in front of an audience, especially an audience you've never been in front of, doesn't work so well.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to poke fun, you want to poke fun at yourself and aim it inward. But getting that audience to laugh with you and laugh at you and laugh at the circumstances, and maybe you're referring to something, you know, maybe the lunch cart fell over and nobody had lunch and you poke fun at that or something, you know, it's a kind of like the language that everybody speaks. And everybody winds up on that common ground. And if you can, you know, I was listening to a program that Judy Carter had about that. And what she was saying was that, you know, when you have a serious speech, like this one guy was giving a speech on the genocide in Darfur, it's like, how do you make that funny? And it's like, well, you don't. You don't make funny that aspect of it, but there are parts of it that you can talk about that you can add humor in. For example, you know, maybe there's a funny story around how you're raising funds, and something happened while you were raising funds in that for Darfur, and so you can talk about that funny story that occurred while you were raising funds, but it's not about the genocide itself. So it's something around it, but it's not it. And you know, let's face it, you've got this subject matter that is really intense, or maybe you're an engineer and talking about rocket science or something. Sorry, Woody. And it's a boring subject or something that people really have a hard time connecting to. So you kind of defer from it and you talk about something funny and it kind of releases the tension and gets everybody reengaged. So, you know, I think it's essential in pretty much any speech that you do. You should always try and look for adding humor in it, tasteful humor in it, non-offensive humor into your speeches and connecting with your audience on that level.
Right, but don't get self-deprecating. Yeah. If you get too self-deprecating, your audience won't know whether they can laugh at it or not.
Yeah, I have no idea anybody that does that, but there's a few, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's too uncomfortable, in other words, for the audience. Chris?
Yeah, don't make it uncomfortable for the audience.
Yeah. If you've got something and you just keep beating yourself down, I mean, after a while, you look like somebody that has no self-esteem and you lose respect from the audience. But if you poke fun here and there, or, you know, it goes pretty well. But if you keep doing it, it just makes you look, you know, well, you lose credibility with the audience, I think.
Yeah. You don't want to say I'm a big moron. You want to say something like, I don't know what I was thinking, but for whatever reason, I turned right onto some trolley tracks or something. But you don't have to sort of beat yourself up. Everybody's done some weird thing. They don't know what they were thinking. So try not to preface it and make people go, what? You're an idiot. Why? Well, that's not an idiot, because I do that kind of stuff, too. Now you've insulted yourself and your audience, because they're relating to you. I'm a moron.
Well,
hey, I'm not a moron. Those trolley tracks in downtown are easy to turn on to.
Sorry about that. Chris, listen, we have to wrap up for the evening. I can't believe how fast this time went. You have given some incredible tips, and I'd just like to go over a few of the things that both you and Bob have said so we have some takeaway for the evening. First thing that really resonated with me was start with a light subject matter and infuse some humor and test that out. Number two, practice. It is essential to getting this down and getting comfortable. Give some background if it's a serious subject so people know what you're talking about and the humor will make sense when it comes up. And if you're not funny, I love the piece from Judy Carter, don't change your topic, just infuse some funny into the stories. And
Yeah. That
humor is really essential in these speeches. Funny is money, that I think sums it up. So if you're looking to do a successful speech for whatever purpose, it's essential. Do you two have any last-minute tips that you want to add in?
I have one last-minute thing that I want to say is that there are some formulas that you can follow to add humor to your speech, and you just Google them, and Judy Carter has some, but I'm sure there's other people who have them as well, and those formulas work really well. What do you got, Chris?
I'm going to say that you aren't going to do funny things the same way that everybody else is. You're going to find your own way to infuse humor. You're going to find your own voice. But just...
I love that. Well, and on that note, be authentic and have a great night, everyone. I hope you enjoy your evening. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Kim. Bye-bye.